You are listening to the Best in Wealth podcast, episode number 243. This is the Best in Wealth podcast, a show for successful family stewards who want real answers about wealth and investing so we can feel secure about our family's future. At the Best in Wealth podcast, we think differently about wealth and investing, and you should too. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Scott Wellens, and I'm your host of the Best in Wealth podcast. Now, this is a show dedicated to helping real people, that is you, my friend, build real wealth so together we can take family stewardship to the next level. I'm a fiduciary, a fee-only certified financial planner, an educator, and a wealth advisor, and it is great to be with you today. And today, we're going to talk about the mutual fund landscape. In the exchange-traded fund landscape. I know, I'll get to that in just a second. But before we do, did anyone on this podcast, listening to this podcast, I should say, fill out an NCAA bracket? The championships are right around the corner. Did you fill one out? And if you did, how did you go about filling that out? Because I had a couple of different options when I decided to do an NCAA bracket. In full disclosure, I love sports. I watch every NFL Packer game, Green Bay Packer game. I watch some of the Milwaukee Bucks and Milwaukee Brewers. I watch all of my girls' volleyball, but I watch very little college basketball. Please don't hold that against me. So I don't have a lot of knowledge. So when it was time for me to fill out the bracket, I didn't know where to start, but I knew that I had some choices. One choice was I could fill it out myself and just figure it out. Or I could have clicked a button where it would fill in all of the names for me based off of what the highest percentage of everybody else was doing. So if most people in round one picked the University of Kentucky, which they did, then the computer would put the University of Kentucky in there for me. I thought that might be a good idea. Following the herd might not be bad. And so that's what I selected. And just so you know, I'm towards the bottom of my bracket, or at least a little under halfway. I am not going to win. There was another button I could have pressed, but I didn't, which is I could have paid a fee to have an expert pick those teams for me. I don't know why I didn't select that expert. Maybe I was too cheap. Maybe I didn't know who the expert was or what gave that expert the right to pick the team for me, but I didn't. I know a lot of you just fill it out yourself. Some people, and I've heard, they just close their eyes and make picks, and those are the people that generally win the office pool. So is it skill or is it luck? I know my wife picked a fantasy football team 1 year. She was in fantasy football 1 year of her life, and she picked her entire team based off of how the football players looked. If they were really good looking, they were on her team. If they were not good looking, they were not on her team. A 12-team fantasy football league, and my wife takes first place. Let's get to the topic of the day. All right, here we go. The mutual fund landscape. What in the heck do I mean by that? Well, every year there's a number of different organizations that take a look at all of the potential mutual funds and exchange traded funds that we can pick from as investors if we don't want to pick single stocks. And at the end of 2023, there were a total of 4,722 U.S. domiciled funds that we could choose from. Now, of those, 2,043 were picking out of mutual funds, exchange-traded funds from U.S. equities, 1,124 international funds, but domiciled here in the U.S., and then over 1,500 bond funds that you could choose from. So many different choices. And if you add up all the money and all these 4,722 funds, it adds up to $10.6 trillion. Man, we can't even fathom what $1 billion is like. You don't know what it would be like if all of a sudden $1 billion was plopped in your lap. You can't fathom how much money that is, let alone a trillion, let alone $10.62 trillion. Isn't that amazing? And of that, $5.4 trillion is in U.S. equity funds, $2.1 trillion in international equities, and $3 trillion in bond funds. So crazy. So now think about it for a second. You're young. You decide to open up a brokerage account at one of the large brokerage firms, and you're smart enough to know that you might not be smart enough to pick individual companies. Like, you know it's highly risky to just buy one company. However, you know that buying a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund, you're buying a basket of companies, so you're spreading the risk around a little bit. But here you are with almost 5,000 different choices. How in the world do you select these funds? Which ones are going to be winners? Which ones are going to beat the market? And which ones aren't? How do I go about that? Well, less daunting is if you have a 401k plan where there might be 20 or 30 options. How in the world do I pick those 20 or 30? It's still very daunting and difficult because you want to pick ones that are going to do the best, or at least ones that are going to beat the market. And there are generally two different ways that we can invest inside of these funds, either actively or passively. What do I mean by that? Well, active funds have what are called a mutual fund manager. There's somebody managing that fund. Now, they may have a team of people helping them out, but the reason that that manager exists in active funds because they are considered the experts, the ones that are going to look into all of the publicly traded companies in the United States and pick the ones for this particular fund, the ones that they feel like are underpriced, and buy them. And that basket is rolled up into a mutual fund that you may have the option to buy, either through your brokerage account or through your 401k plan. And as time goes on, that mutual fund manager and its team or co-managers might decide that some of those funds they originally bought aren't good buys anymore, so they're going to sell them. And other ones, they're looking at other companies and they're like, man, we should buy this. So they're buying other companies. These are the experts. You are hiring this manager when you buy this fund to do well. But the question is, how do you know if they're doing well? How do you know if the fund that you picked, if that manager is doing well? Well, you could look at your 401k options and see which ones are doing better than others, I guess. But does that really telling us if this mutual fund manager is doing well? Well, up until the 60s, we had no idea if mutual fund managers were doing well. But that's when the University of Chicago was given a $300,000 grant where they looked at every single publicly traded company, every price point that ended every day, every dividend that was issued, and finally came up with what we call indices. So we could see how the market was doing. And for the first time ever, we knew at that point in time anyway, that the U.S. stock market averaged about 9% per year. And if you fast forward today and we look back 90 some years with all available stock market data, we see that the U.S. stock market has averaged about 10% per year. I'm rounding here. So you might say to yourself, if I'm going to buy a mutual fund, hire an expert, a mutual fund manager, an active mutual fund, if that's the kind of fund that I'm going to buy, then they better do better than this 10%. That's a good benchmark. But it goes a little bit deeper than that, because if you bought a small company fund, wouldn't I want to just compare it to other small companies? And the answer is yes. That's why we have different indices, the Russell 2000, the S&P 500, the Russell 1000, and the list goes on. So you need to know which benchmark you are looking at when you're comparing how these mutual fund managers are doing. And that's one way to invest, is buying actively traded funds. I should say actively managed funds, where there's a mutual fund manager or a team of managers that are buying and selling companies within this mutual fund, within this basket. Alternatively, the second way that people invest is by buying what are called index funds. Index funds track the indices that I just spoke about. You could buy a S&P 500 fund that tracks the S&P 500. And so essentially, you're buying the market. there is an indice called the Russell 3000, where you could buy an index fund that tracks basically the U.S. market. And you will receive that return, whatever the U.S. market does, that Russell 3000, minus a couple of things, expenses and tracking error. That particular fund might not hold all of the companies at the time that they should probably hold them if their goal is to track this index. So you either have two choices. Either I'm going to hire someone that's going to beat that index, or I'm going to buy that index, that I feel satisfied buying that index. And if we just look at it from that standpoint, you think to yourself, well, I want to do better than the index. I want to do better than whatever the stock market delivers. There's got to be an expert that's going to be able to deliver something better than the average of the stock market. So remember when I talked about the University of Chicago and the grant they were issued? Well, it's the security, it's called the CRISP. It's the Center for Research on Security Prices, and it still exists today. So there are several companies that look at all of these different funds, and now we can compare how they've done compared to the market, compared to the average. And let me tell you, it's not looking good for the experts. It's not looking good for the actively traded funds. And I'm going to post this particular report in the show notes at bestinwealth.com. But when we look back 10, 15, and 20 years, it ain't looking so good. Because think about it for a second. If you started a new job 10 years ago and you selected, I don't know, one fund or several funds for your 401k, have you looked back and checked out and seen how it's done? Well, let's pretend for a second that it is 10 years ago. So it's December 31st, 2013, and we want to select some actively traded mutual funds. We want to find the expert. Well, at that point in time, there were 3,022 funds available to pick from. And when we fast forward 10 years later to 12/31/2023, only 67% of that 3,022 of those number of funds even exist anymore. They're gone. They got wiped off the planet. Why? Because they weren't doing very good. How often do you get a letter from your 401k company that says, oh, we're going to trade this fund for that fund, or this fund is getting swallowed up into this fund? Happens all the time. Happens all the time. So with 67% of survivors, we know that 33% did not survive the average of the stock market, or guess what? They would still be around. But when we look at the percentage of winners now, of all those 3,000 funds, we only see, looking back 10 years, that there are 25% of those experts that actually beat the average of the market. Can you believe that? It's hard to fathom because they're the experts. So here you are 10 years ago, and you only have a 25% chance of selecting a fund that's going to do well or better than the average of the market over the next 10 years. Guess what? It gets worse. If we look at 15 years ago, ending 12/31/2023, there were 3,241 funds to choose from. Only 51% of them survived, a little less than half, and only 21% of them have actually beaten their benchmark or the average of the market. We go back 20 years, my friends, even worse. 45% survivors. That's it. Only less than half even survived the 20 years. They went out of business. That particular fund went out of business. And of the 2,860 funds available 20 years ago, so December 31st, 2003, only 18% have beaten the market. What does this tell me? Experts haven't done so well. Is it the experts' fault? No, they're smart people, probably way smarter than I am. Nice accolades after their name. Great people. No doubt about that. But it's tough. It's tough to over and over again find mispriced stocks, ones that are underpriced or overpriced. Because if you think about it, just think about Apple for a second. Apple's having a tough year so far this year, but has had a great run. There are millions of participants in the stock market every day. There are millions of trades going on with Apple every day. And every time someone wants to buy it because they feel like it's a good deal, someone else has to sell it because they think like it's a good deal to sell. So all of this market participation is leading Apple into its maybe its truest value. No one will ever know its true intrinsic value, but all of these market participants are driving it towards a certain value. So when you make a guess, or when you think that Apple's a good buy, time to buy it or time to sell it, you are pitting up your opinion to all of these other millions of participants. The deck is stacked against you. On top of that, if you're going to hire a mutual fund manager or a team, that team needs to get paid because they're working hard. Trust me, they're flying all over the country. They're interviewing all these executives at these companies to see whether or not they should buy, and they still have a hard time getting it right. But with that comes a cost, and that's the expense ratio. And that expense ratio comes right off of the return that that mutual fund is delivering. So if the mutual fund manager delivered 10% to the fund increase over the year before, but that fund cost 0.75%, you as an investor will only see that the fund returned 9.25%. That's the way it works. Some of that hidden money. And if you think to yourself, well, Scott, how about I look at past performance and I'll just pick those funds that have done great the last 10 years, because those are probably the ones that are going to do great the next 10 years. And if you take the time to go to Best in Wealth and read this report, you will find out that when we look at past performance, it is not enough to predict future results. When we see all of those winners from all of these periods and times, and we just buy the winners, we see that only 25% of those funds actually persist. So you're right back where you started. Whether you're looking at track records or not, you have a very low probability of picking those winning funds. The deck is stacked against you. The deck is stacked against the expert, which leads me to the second way that people invest are through index funds. Index funds generally cost a whole lot less. That expense ratio is a fraction, generally, of what the active funds are. We call these passive funds. So you look at all this information, you're like, I just want to buy the market. I don't think an expert can help me out. And if that's you, you should look at your 401k and see if there's index funds available, or in your brokerage fund and see if index funds are available. Are you an active investor or a passive investor? But I will tell you, my friend, that even within index funds, because they are so mechanical in nature, because all you're doing is buying what the index has, what is in that index at that particular time, it is not an efficient fund either. Do I think it's a better choice? My opinion is yes, after looking at the research. But after looking at investing in mutual funds and exchange-traded funds over the last 20 years, I think there's a better way. So there's a bunch of information for you. I think the first thing you need to ask yourself is, how am I investing and how do I want to invest? Because sure, if you're going to pick actively managed funds and you get them right, you're going to do better than what the market does. But you just need to know that chances are you're going to do worse than the market. So then you can say to yourself, well, I am only going to invest in index funds. And with all the research I see, what I just said, that might be a good idea for you. I'm not making a suggestion for anybody, because you should talk to your investment advisor first, but maybe that's the right thing for you to do, looking at all these percentages. But why did I just say that? I don't think that it's the best way to invest. Well, I don't have time to go over it on this show. But we like to look at things differently here at Fortress Planning Group and the Best in Wealth podcast, because we go right back to the Center for Research on Security Prices. And we see some other data in the numbers that allows us to invest in a way where we like to call it, or I like to call it, index funds on steroids. There are mechanical issues about index funds that are not great. So we look at the experts and figure out what they are so that we can pick the exchange-traded funds that go outside of the box and outside of the realms of these two different active and passive ways that I just spoke about. And we access the power of the markets, and with not guarantees, of course, but hope that we can do better than the market. but by not being an active expert picking stocks. Because after all, we are family stewards, and we need to do what's best with our money. If you have questions, you need to reach out to me, scott@fortressplanninggroup.com. Let's have a second opinion about your investments today. That's all the time that I have. I hope everybody has a great weekend, and we will see you on the flip side. Bye-bye. The Best in Wealth Podcast is hosted by Scott Wellens. Scott Wellens is the principal of Fortress Planning Group. Fortress Planning Group is a registered investment advisory firm regulated by U.S. Securities and Exchange Committee in accordance with compliance with securities laws and regulations. Fortress Planning Group does not render or offer to render personalized investment or tax advice through the Best in Wealth Podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.